name is Jonah Gordon. Friday nights carry more weight now than they did in college. Back then, every night had the potential for chaos or adventure. These days, after grinding through 50 or even 60-hour work weeks, Fridays felt like gasping for air after being underwater. Will was running late as usual. The transition from campus life to consulting hadn't changed that about him in the least. My own transformation into someone who noticed things like punctuality still felt foreign, another symptom of adult life creeping in. I sat on my couch, nursing a Sam Adams while the January draft seeped through my apartment's old windows, a reminder that Boston's historic charm came with its share of discomforts. I was watching the Celtics lose to the Bucks. I grimaced as Rasheed Wallace failed to cross either three-point line for several minutes before launching another three that hit the back iron. We had plans to meet everyone at the Black Rose downtown that night. The usual crowd from Northeastern would be there. It felt good knowing I could finally go without doing the mental math beforehand, figuring out how many beers I could order without overdrafting my account. The steady paycheck from BCG meant I didn't have to nurse one beer all night like I used to. The front door finally swung open and Will strode in, a six-pack of Harpoon IPA dangling from his fingers. His eyes locked under the TV screen and he burst into a forced laughter, not even bothering with a hello. "Look at that beautiful score," he exclaimed, his New York accent brimming with satisfaction. 4 years at Northeastern hadn't dulled his hometown pride. If anything, being surrounded by Boston sports culture had only strengthened his contrarian stance. He dropped to the far end of the couch, cracking open one of his beers. "You know, I hear the WNBA is looking for new talent. Maybe they should give the Celtics a call." Will had the type of humor where he was always trying to get under your skin, but despite that, he was also the kind of person who would always have your back. We'd been inseparable in college, and he had a knack for talking me into things that I probably wouldn't have and shouldn't have done on my own. The stupid kind of stuff like trying to steal the school mascot outfit after a football game. The kind of stuff that had very little upside, but made for a great story. It felt almost illegal that we are both working for a firm like Boston Consulting Group now. Despite our friendship, this was Will's first visit to my Beacon Hill apartment. The daily grind had pulled us in different directions. Client meetings and late nights at the office had left little room for anything else. Will's eyes scanned my living room, looking like a quality inspector searching for defects. His gaze settled on two frame prints I'd hung last month. Three panels of separated gardens rendered in washed-out grays and browns. Two identical women stood in different gardens, facing each other across the stone barriers, while between them, in the central panel, a third figure seemed to be melting into the surrounding flowers. The West Elm designers had called them conversation pieces, but now I found myself wondering what had possessed me to bring such images into my home. "Oh, man," Will shook his head, his beer paused halfway to his mouth. "You get a consulting gig and suddenly you're an art collector now? The only art you ever had in college was that stupid fucking Boondock Saints poster." I couldn't help but laugh, both genuinely and defensively. "I mean, what do you want from me? We're supposed to be adults now. I can't exactly hang movie posters in my living room anymore." Before Will could find anything else to mock, my roommate wandered into the kitchen, his dark-rimmed glasses catching the overhead light above as he opened the fridge. From our spot in the living room, we could just barely see him through the partial wall divider. Will leaned forward, lowering his voice. "Who is that?" "Oh, that's just my roommate," I said, staring forward at the TV while taking another sip of my beer. Will stared at me with eyebrows raised. "Since when do you have a roommate?" The question hit me like a slap in the face. I opened my mouth to answer and then closed it. My mind scrambled to pinpoint when exactly my roommate had moved in. The memory should have been there. Lease signing, moving boxes, the first awkward conversations. But I found nothing. just a vague sense that he'd always been there. I shrugged, trying to mask my sudden unease. Since I moved in, I guess. Will let out a short, incredulous laugh. You guess? Okay, well, what's his name then? The question seemed to echo in my head. My roommate was still in the kitchen. His movements felt familiar as he reached for a glass above the cabinet. A routine I'd witnessed countless times. I knew his habits, how he always rinsed his dishes immediately after using them, or how he kept his shoes perfectly aligned by the door. But his name? My chest tightened as I realized I had no idea what my roommate's name was. None. The person I'd been living with for what? Weeks? Months? The certainty that I should know this basic fact made the gap in my knowledge feel like a physical wound. I felt Will's eyes boring into me, waiting for an answer. My mind raced. I needed a name, any name, for the figure moving through my kitchen with such practiced familiarity. Will was one of the only people who knew what had happened during my freshman year at Yale, the incident that had led me to transfer to Northeastern. He had seen me at my worst, back when things had started to unravel. The last thing I wanted was for him to think I was losing it again. John, I blurted out almost instinctively. Will was still leaning forward, his beer forgotten in his hand, looking at me expectantly. His eyes narrowed slightly. John. John what? Hancock, I said hastily, wincing internally at how ridiculous it sounded. John Hancock? Will repeated, disbelief dripping from his words. Like the fucking signature guy from Fenway? This should have been funny, and in any other moment it was. Any other day I would have made sure Will knew how stupid he was for not knowing who John Hancock was beyond the sign at Fenway Park. But there was nothing funny about this moment. No, I said, the word coming out more sharply than I intended. Will leaned back into the couch. All right, man, whatever you say. He shook his head and took another sip of his beer. I watched my roommate through the kitchen divider. He moved with a practiced ease, reaching for items he knew the exact location of. The water filter in the fridge, his favorite blue glass above the top shelf. Each gesture felt wrong now, though, hinted by my inability to recall basic facts about him. The comfortable familiarity of moments ago had transformed into something unsettling. He belonged here, clearly. His possessions occupied their own spaces. His shoes sat by the door. His coat hung on the rack. But now, each item felt like evidence of an invasion I'd somehow failed to notice. My eyes fixed on his back as he stood at the counter, and I realized I couldn't remember a single conversation we'd ever had. Not one. The figure in my kitchen had suddenly become a stranger, wearing the mask of a roommate. I couldn't shake the feeling that I'd been blind to something obvious and terrible. A sudden urge to leave my apartment washed over me. The walls felt like they were closing in. The air was suffocating. I needed to escape, to break free from the disorienting realization that I was sharing my life with a phantom. The thought of the crowded bar, the familiar faces, the noises and the laughter, it felt like a lifeline. Maybe, just maybe, surrounded by the normalcy of my friends, I could sort this out in my head. The thought was absurd, but I clung to it like a raft in the storm. My watch read 8:45. I made a show of checking it, tapping the face with an exaggerated concern. Hey, we should probably head out. Black Rose gets packed around 9. The words tumbled out just a little too fast. Don't want to get stuck standing in line all night. Will gave me an odd look, but finished his beer in one long pull. I was already on my feet, grabbing my coat from the rack next to my roommate's. A dark wool pea coat I'd never seen him wear before, but he must have walked past 100 times. Will pulled the last 4 beers from a 6-pack out for our trip to the bar as I yanked the door open. I'll be the first to admit that the Black Rose isn't exactly sophisticated. It's definitely what older folks would describe as a college bar. The floor is stuck to your shoes, and the music stayed in a loft perpetual loop of early 2000s hits. But I had a rule about these kinds of things. You weren't really out of college until about 2 years after graduation. That's how long it took for the shine to wear off, and for the real world to sink its teeth in completely. By that math, I still had about 21 months left of plausible deniability. Friday nights at the Black Rose always felt like stepping back on the Northeastern's campus. Familiar faces dotted the crowded room, nodding in recognition, some offering waves or quick shouts over the blaring music. Will and I waded through throngs of bodies, exchanging quick greetings and half-hearted promises to catch up later. We eventually found a spot at the bar, elbows nudging sticky surfaces as we claimed our territory. Will didn't waste any time. He leaned over the counter, signaling the bartender with that easy confidence of his. Moments later, a line of shot glasses materialized before us, filled with amber liquid that promised a quick route to forgetfulness. "Come on, man," Will said, sliding a shot my way. Normally, I'd start with a beer, pacing myself like a marathon runner. Shots were for later, when the night had settled into its rhythm. But tonight was different. The memory of my apartment still clung to me like a second skin. John Hancock, or whoever he was, his presence lingering in the corners of my mind. The bass from Mr. Brightside thumped through the floorboards as I lifted the shot glass, clinking it against Will's before downing it in one swift motion. The burn felt like clarity washing down my throat. While catching up with some new BCG colleagues we'd run into, Will suddenly got distracted. "Holy shit, Ben Singer?" he shouted over the noise. Ben emerged from the crowd, sporting the same backwards Red Sox cap he'd worn throughout most of college. His face split into a grin as Will pulled him towards our spot at the bar. "What are you doing here, man?" I asked, genuinely surprised to see him. Last I'd heard, he'd taken a job down in Providence. "Ah, just moved back. Got tired of living in Rhode Island. Place is boring as shit compared to here." Ben flagged down the bartender. We quickly reminisced on some of our wilder times at Northeastern. "You guys remember those Bruins playoff games?" Ben said, already slightly slurring his words. Will's eyes lit up. "Dude, you were an absolute disaster before those games. Remember when you pissed on the green line waiting for the tee?" Ben shook his head laughing. "What? No way. That never happened." Will turned to me, claiming I had a picture of it on my phone, which I vaguely remembered as well. The memory was hazy, but Will was right. I documented some of Ben's more colorful moments that night. "Hold on." I pulled out my phone, thumbing through my photos. "I think I still had it here somewhere." This is slander," Ben protested, but he was still grinning. "You're making this up." I scrolled past blurred pictures, hazy memories flicking across the screen. There was Will, passed out on a couch with a lampshade on his head. My ex-girlfriend, her blonde hair tangled, laughing at something I couldn't quite recall. Then, my thumb froze. There it was, a picture that shouldn't exist. A selfie with a face I recognized immediately. My current roommate. His features were unmistakable. Dark hair, glasses perched on his nose. We both stared at the camera, faces devoid of any emotion, like someone was forcing us to take the picture. My breath caught in my throat. The air around me suddenly felt thin. The longer I stared, the more unnatural it looked, like someone had carefully arranged two corpses for a portrait. I checked the date, March 18th, 2007, 3:33 a.m. The timestamp burned into my vision. Sophomore year, before I'd even thought about moving to Beacon Hill, before I'd started at Boston Consulting, before my stomach lurched, the bar sounds warped and stretched around me, becoming distant and hollow. I'll be right back," I managed to croak, shoving my phone deep into my pocket. Will called after me, but his voice was lost in the noise. I shouldered through the crowd, my feet carrying me on autopilot to the back of the bar. The bathroom door felt heavier than it should have as I pushed through. The fluorescent lights above buzzed loudly. I barely made it into the stall before my body revolted. Everything I'd had came up in violent waves, burning my throat. Between heaves, the photo flashed in my mind. Those dead eyes, that familiar yet stranger's face next to mine. My roommate, in my sophomore year photos, the same face, the exact same face. I stayed there for a moment, breathing heavily, sweat beating down my forehead despite the chill in my veins. That picture, it defied explanation. And yet, there it was, on my phone, undeniable proof that something was very wrong. I splashed some water on my face and stared at my reflection, trying to ground myself in the present. I stuck 3 sticks of gum in my mouth, trying to lose the taste. After a few deep breaths, I pushed myself away from the sink and headed back to the bar. Ben had disappeared into the Friday night crowd, but Will remained at our spot. He raised an eyebrow as I approached. "You good?" I ignored his question and waved down the bartender instead, quickly ordering 4 shots of Jameson. I had already made the business decision that reality was not my friend that night. Better to keep it at arm's length until I could figure out what the hell was happening. The bartender lined up the shots with a practiced efficiency. Will's expression changed from concern to something closer to approval. After refueling what I had lost in the bathroom, the room had taken on that familiar warm glow when I spotted Jessica across the bar. Her blonde hair caught the dim of the light as she laughed with a group of friends near the dartboards. We'd met during my junior year at Northeastern, back when she was still at Boston College. A mutual friend's party, if I remember right. Since then, we'd fallen into this pattern, together for a few months, apart for longer, either of us quite ready to let go or hold on too tight. The last time we had talked was about 2 months ago, a coffee that turned into dinner that had turned into breakfast. Then, radio silence, as usual. Now, here she was, making her way through the crowded bar towards us. "Hey, stranger," her voice carried over the music. "Jess, hey." The shots had loosened my tongue just enough to sound casual. Will swayed slightly beside me, grinning. "Jessica, did you know our boy here has become an art collector? Real fancy shit. Got this weird painting of a garden hanging in his place now?" I shook my head, laughing. "He's exaggerating." Jessica laughed too. She knew Will's antics all too well. "Who do you come here with?" I asked, tilting my head towards the noise. "Just some friends," she said, gesturing vaguely behind her with the flick of her wrist. I followed her gaze to a group huddled near the dartboards, their faces blurred in the dim of the light. Before I could respond, Will slapped the bar again, summoning the bartender with practiced ease. Another round of shots appeared, and he nudged one towards Jessica and one towards me. "One for the road, or whatever," he slurred, raising his glass. I caught Jessica's eye, a flicker of amusement crossing her face. We clinked the glasses together, the sound swallowed by the pulsing music, and down the burning liquid. "Want to grab some air?" I asked Jessica, pulling my pack of American Spirits from my jacket pocket. We squeezed through the crowd and pushed out into the night air. The January chill should have hit harder, but the alcohol had wrapped me in a comfortable numbness. A few other smokers huddled near the entrance, their conversations floating in fragments across the sidewalk. Jess pulled her own lighter out before I could offer mine. The orange glow illuminated her face as she took a drag, and for a moment I remembered why we kept circling back to each other. "So," she started, exhaling smoke into the night air, "I know I've seen you since then, but are you okay from a couple months ago? I still don't really know what happened that night, when you started talking about feeling bugs under your skin." She paused, studying my face from the streetlight. "It really freaked me out. Are you, like, better now?" The memory had hit me like a splash of cold water. That night had been buried under layers of careful forgetting, But now it resurfaced, the crawling sensation, the panic, the way Jessica's face had shifted from concern to fear. I took a long drag, buying time before answering. "Look, Jess," I began, trying to keep my tone light. "I already told you, it was the medication I was on at the time. Some weird side effect. I'm fine now, really." Her hazel eyes locked onto mine, searching for something beyond my words. It made me uneasy, like she could see through the layers I'd carefully built up. "Really," I added, a bit more firmly. "It's nothing to worry about." She kept staring, clearly not satisfied with my answer. The silence stretched out between us, filled only by the muffled bass from inside. I let out a short laugh that came out more defensive than I had intended. "Look, I don't know what you want me to say. It was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's not going to happen again." She raised an eyebrow. I decided to try to lighten the mood. "And hey, if it does, I'll just use the bugs for fishing." Jess laughed then, a genuine laugh, in the way that I loved. "Oh, Jonah, that's gross." I lit another cigarette, watching Jessica barely halfway done with hers. The street had emptied somewhat, leaving us in a pocket of relative quiet. The neon signs from surrounding bars cast alternating shadows across her face. "So," she said, flicking ash onto the sidewalk, "you seeing anyone?" I shook my head, aiming for nonchalance. "Nah, not really. Work's been pretty crazy." The door to the Black Rose swung open, spilling music and warmth onto the street. Will emerged, squinting against the cold. "Let me get one of those cancer sticks," he gestured toward my pack. I pulled one out and held my lighter steady against the wind, as Will cupped his hand around the flame. The orange glow illuminated his slightly unfocused eyes. "What's the move after this?" Will asked, exhaling smoke through his nose. "Actually," Jess cut in before I could respond, "Jonah was just about to get us a cab back to his place." She glanced at me and then back to Will. "You're welcome to join." My heart picked up speed, but I kept my expression neutral. The invitation hung in the air, along with our mingled smoke. Bill took another drag, grinning. "Thanks, but I think I'm going to stick around here. Night's still young." He gestured back toward the bar with his cigarette. "You kids have fun, though." A few minutes later, we were on our way to Beacon Hill. The cab's heater fought against Boston's winter chill as we settled into the back seat. Jess's shoulder pressed against mine with each turn, her perfume mixing with the lingering scent of cigarettes. So, just a heads up, I said, watching streetlights slide across her face. "I have a roommate. He's a little weird." Jess's laugh cut through the music coming from the radio. "A roommate? What's the point of slaving away at BCG if you're going to have a roommate?" She had a point. The salary at Boston Consulting Group wasn't exactly entry level, and most of my colleagues lived alone in similar neighborhoods. I'd never really considered having a roommate before. Before what? The thought slipped away like water through my fingers. I forced a laugh. I don't know. The cab turned onto Charles Street, the brick buildings of Beacon Hill looming ahead. Jess's hand found mine in the darkness. "Just try to ignore him if he's there," I added, not entirely sure why I felt the need to say it. She gave me a skeptical look, her eyebrow arched in that way it did when she wasn't buying something. But she just nodded, squeezing my hand a little tighter. The cab pulled up to the building and I fumbled for my wallet, suddenly realizing just how drunk I was. The world swam slightly, and my hand shook as I paid the fare. Outside my door, I struggled with the lock, the key slipping in my grasp. I shot a glance back at Jess, hoping she hadn't noticed until I finally managed to get the door open. I almost prayed that my roommate wouldn't be home, or at least asleep, or maybe even that I'd hallucinated the whole thing. But as we stepped inside, there he was, sitting at the kitchen counter. He looked up, seemingly unfazed by our late arrival. The overhead light glinted off his glasses. The clock in the microwave read at 1:17 a.m. "Hey," I managed, trying to sound casual. Jess echoed my greeting. He just nodded, returning to his cereal. The sound of the spoon clinking against the bowl filled the silence. It felt strangely amplified in the quiet apartment. "I'm going to use the bathroom," Jess said, and she disappeared down the hall, leaving me alone with him. I leaned against the doorframe, the room swaying slightly as my roommate sat at the counter facing away from me. My mind raced for something to say, something that might jar loose a memory, a name, anything. My throat went dry as I stood there watching him. The simple act of speaking to him felt like preparing to step off a cliff. A strange thought crept into my head, that maybe acknowledging my lack of memory about him might shift something fundamental between us. Like the moment I admitted I didn't know who he was, I'd give up some essential protection, or break an invisible barrier just keeping me safe. You haven't met Jess before, right? I'd thrown the question out as a test, though I wasn't sure what answer I was looking for. My head buzzed with alcohol, making it hard to focus on any single strategy. Part of me hoped that he'd slip up, reveal something impossible. He turned his head partway in my direction, but his eyes seemed fixed somewhere past my shoulder. I don't think so, he said in a flat tone. He turned back to his cereal, shoulders hunched slightly over the counter. His calmness scraped at my nerves, and I couldn't shake the feeling that beneath his indifference lay something else, amusement maybe, or satisfaction. Like he knew exactly why I was unsettled and was content to let me squirm. His presence filled the kitchen with a weight that had nothing to do with his physical form. The bathroom door clicked down the hall, and I nearly jumped. Jess emerged from the bathroom and I caught her eye. "All right," I muttered, putting some unneeded finality to my conversation. I took her hand and led her to my bedroom. The door closed with a click as I turned the lock. We fell onto my bed, her lips finding mine in the darkness. But even as Jess pressed against me, my mind kept drifting to the kitchen, to him, just sitting there, eating cereal in the middle of the night, like he belonged there. For some reason, the thought made my blood boil. Who was he just to be so casual in my home? I pulled back from Jess, sitting up abruptly. The alcohol swimming in my head didn't help the rising anger. "I need to tell you something," my voice came out rough. "That guy out there? I don't know who that is." Jess propped herself up on her elbows, her expression shifting from passion to irritation. "What do you mean? Did he break in?" No, he lives here. That's the thing. He's my roommate, but I can't remember his name, or when he moved in, or anything about him." "Jonah," she said, sitting up fully now, running a hand through her disheveled hair. "That makes absolutely no sense. How can you not know who your own roommate is?" The way she said it, that tone of careful patience like she was handling something fragile, made my stomach twist. I knew that tone. It was the same one she'd used during my last incident. "Yeah," I said, not as an admission of senselessness, but a call to action, a sudden visceral need to confront the absurdity of it all. I stood up, the room tilting slightly, and I opened the bedroom door. He was still there, at the counter, facing away from me. I waited a beat, half expecting him to turn, to acknowledge me. He didn't. "Hey man, who are you?" He glanced back at me, casual turn of the head, but no real engagement. "Who are you?" I repeated. The words hung heavy and accusatory. He didn't answer, just turned back to the TV. His shoulders hunched. The flickering white painted his face in shifting shadows. "What is your name?" I demanded, each word punctuated by the pounding in my head. This time he turned slightly, but his gaze drifted past me, settling on Jess, who was now in the doorway. "Chona," she said, her voice laced with a warning. "What the hell are you doing?" I grimaced, the anger draining away from me and re-manifesting itself as fear. Jess was right. This was insane. I'd dragged her into this, whatever this was. And now she was caught in the crossfire. A beat of silence hung there. Then, without turning, he spoke. "Chona, what happened at Yale?" The mention of Yale sent a jolt through me. My hand shot out, grabbing the handle of my chef's knife from the wooden block. The blade caught the kitchen light as I pointed it at him. "What did you say?" He remained motionless at the counter. "Oh God, Chona." Jess backed away to the living room, her phone already in her hand. "I'm calling Will." I barely registered her words. I focused still locked on him. The knife felt wrong in my grip. I held it out like a sword. I couldn't lower it. He turned then, fully facing me for the first time. His eyes met mine, dark and unblinking behind those glasses. No fear, no concern about a blade being pointed at his chest. Just expectation, like a teacher waiting for a student to answer a question. The silence stretched between us, broken only by the sound of the front door opening as Jess stepped outside. She left the door open, and I could vaguely make out what she was saying through the phone. "Tell me about Yale, Chona," he said quietly. The mention of Yale created a vacuum in my chest, pulling at memories I'd buried deep. I shifted left, keeping the blade between us but angling away from the open door where Jess's voice drifted in. His eyes followed me, patient and knowing. "How do you know about Yale?" The words came out a little hoarse. "Just tell me what happened there." His voice carried no threat, just quiet insistence. The truth about Yale sat like a stone in my throat. For 3 years, I'd crafted different versions of that night, sanitized accounts for my parents, vague explanations for my friends, carefully edited statements for the dean, each telling stripped away another layer of reality, until sometimes I wondered if I remembered it correctly myself. But now, facing this stranger who somehow knew to ask, the real story pressed against my lips, the compulsion to finally speak it aloud, to tell the unvarnished truth of that November night. "Okay." Something shifted inside me as I said it, like a gear clicking into place. The fog of alcohol cleared from my mind, replaced by an unsettling clarity. I lowered the knife, letting my arm fall to my side. The blade pointed harmlessly at the floor now. I backed around the wall and I slid down until I was sitting, knees pulled up. The cool surface of the wall grounded me. He remained perched on his stool, waiting patiently. It was during a night class, statistics in Davies Auditorium. I always sat on the right side, about halfway up. The professor, Dr. Manning, she was new that semester. At first, I thought it was just the lighting, the way that projector beam caught her face when she moved. But then, her features started to shift. Subtle at first. Her jaw would elongate when she turned to write on the board. Her skin just seemed to ripple. No one else noticed. 300 students in that hall, and they all just kept taking notes. Her eyes changed first, becoming yellow with vertical pupils. Then her nose flattened. I just sat there in horror. No one said anything. No one even looked at each other. By halfway through the class, she wasn't even trying to hide it anymore. My roommate nodded slowly, his expression unchanged. What happened next? I waited a beat, looking at him in the way that said I recognized what he was doing, prodding, pushing me to confront something I'd buried. But I didn't want to stop. The words, once unleashed, felt like a torrent I couldn't dam. It made me angry, not scared, angry. This thing was just standing there, showing its true form. And everyone just sat there, taking notes like nothing was wrong. 300 people in that auditorium, not one of them looked up. Not one person showed any sign that they saw what I saw. It was just mocking us, mocking me, just standing there teaching class with that reptilian face, knowing that we were all too scared or too blind to acknowledge it. All those students, all those minds, refusing to see, or choosing not to see, I don't know which one is worse. They were complicit. Their willful ignorance gave it power. So I stood up. Right in the middle of the lecture, I just stood up. I started screaming, pointing at her, telling everyone to look, to really look at what I was teaching them. The knife now felt heavy in my hand as I recalled the moment. I shouted that she was a demon, that her face wasn't human. I remember exactly what I said. I said, "I could see you. I can see what you really are, and I'm going to kill you." Two students grabbed me then. I fought back, tried to break free, kept screaming about her face, her eyes. Security came. They had to drag me out. I looked up at my roommate, who hadn't moved from his perch. The dean was understanding, actually. Said I had a mental break from academic pressure or something. They let me withdraw instead of expelling me. 6 weeks in Yale New Haven's psychiatric ward. I leaned forward, my voice dropping. I wasn't crazy. I'm not crazy. What I saw that day was real. Everyone else just chose not to see it. My roommate's expression finally shifted, a look of satisfaction crossing his features as he adjusted his glasses. "That's impressive, Jonah. Most people bury memories like that so deep they can't access them anymore. But you remember every detail." He tilted his head, peering past me towards the open door. Satisfied that we were still alone, he leaned forward on his stool. "I need you to listen carefully," he said, his voice dropping to barely above a whisper. "I need to explain something. The only reason that I've been able to visit you on several occasions is because of a glitch. There's been a mistake. Demons have found their way into living spaces like yours. Most people, their minds simply can't process what they're seeing. The demons have made sure of that." He stood from the stool, moving closer. I gripped the knife tighter. "They'd medicated the population, engineered a society that numbs itself. Social media, pharmaceuticals, endless entertainment, it's all by design. Makes people ignore what's right in front of them." He gestured to the open door. "Your friend out there? She can't see it, won't see it. Her mind literally cannot process what's happening." My throat felt dry. "Why can't I?" "I don't know," he shook his head. "But you've always had it. This ability to see things as they are. Yale wasn't a breakdown, Jonah. You saw through a demon's disguise." The knife trembled in my hand now. "What are you saying?" "I'm saying stop letting them convince you you're crazy. Stop taking their pills. Stop letting them numb your mind." His eyes locked onto mine. "You need to lean into what you see. Fight back. Because they're everywhere now. They're getting bolder, The memory of Dr. Manning's face flickering and shifting in that auditorium rushed back. The way no one else reacted, the absolute certainty I'd felt in that moment, before doubt and medication and therapy buried it all. "You're not alone in this fight," he said, "but you need to trust what you see." He glanced at the doorway again, his movements becoming more urgent. "Listen carefully. Your friends, Will and Jess, they won't remember me, not tomorrow, not ever. Their minds will create explanations, fill in the gaps. That's how it works." His words came out faster now, almost tumbling over each other. "But you have the ability to recall certain events. Still, we need to make absolutely sure that you remember this conversation." Before I could react, he reached down and took the knife from my loose grip. The blade gleamed in his hand as he held it up. "Take off your shirt." My mind screamed to resist, but my body complied. The cotton fabric fell to the floor. He stepped closer, the knife steady in his hand. "This will help you remember." The first cut was sharp, diagonal across my chest. I gasped, but didn't move. The second cut crossed the first. Blood welled up along the lines, but the pain felt distant and disconnected. He handed the knife back to me, handle first. "Now, you have to kill me," he said, matter-of-factly. "It's the only way I can return." The cut on my chest burned. Blood trickled down my stomach, soaking into my waistband. He checked the doorway a final time and looked at me in the eyes.
"Do it now."
I, Jessica Marie Rentschler, hereby declare the following to be a true and accurate account of the events I witnessed on January 16, 2009. At approximately 1:30 a.m., myself and Jonah Gordon departed from the Black Rose Bar, where we took a taxi to his residence at 143 Branch Street, arriving around 1:45 a.m. Upon entering the residence, we encountered a man sitting at the kitchen counter, whom Jonah acknowledged to be his roommate. Jonah and I proceeded to his bedroom. Several minutes later, Jonah confessed to me that he did not know who the man was sitting in the kitchen. I asked for further clarification on his statement, questioning if the man had been seen in the kitchen was an intruder. To this, Jonah clarified that the person was not an intruder, and that he lived in the apartment, but that Jonah did not know his name. Shortly after this, Jonah left the bedroom to confront the man. I remained in the bedroom until I began to hear raised voices in the kitchen. Upon entering the kitchen area, I observed Jonah in an agitated state. The man then asked about an incident regarding Yale University, to which Jonah appeared to become manic. He retrieved a kitchen knife from a wooden block on the counter and pointed it at the man. At this point, I exited the residence and contacted William Benson, a mutual friend, via cell phone, who arrived shortly after. Approximately 10 minutes later, I re-entered the residence with William Benson. Upon re-entering the kitchen, we found a man who appeared to be deceased on the ground. He looked to have sustained several stab wounds around the neck area. Jonah was standing over the man's body, shirtless. Jonah appeared to have suffered a wound on his chest in the shape of a large X. At this time, Jonah seemed to be fully conscious and stated to us, "It is okay. You will not remember this." I then exited the apartment and contacted 911. I certify that the foregoing is true and correct to the best of my knowledge. Jessica Marie Rentschler.